You're listening to Love and Revolution Radio, covering the heart of change and changes of the heart, featuring stories of ordinary, extraordinary people who are waging struggles for love and revolution.
This week on Love and Revolution Radio, Diane Patterson joins us to speak about art, music, and making social change through our creativity.
I was asking myself, what does teach, inspire, be real mean? And I noticed right away, and it's been proving itself to me again and again, that without even trying, we're always teaching, whether we know it or not. It's a reminder to show up the best we can and take responsibility for those actions and thoughts and words, and just know that we can inspire each other.
When God stood before you with her hand, she said, I'll accept love and loving words from your lips. She said, everything changes with conviction like this. I need you to be good right now. I need you to be good, good, and how. I need you to be love right now. I need you to be love, 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 love and revolution.
Hello and welcome to all of our Love and Revolution Radio listeners near and far. This is Rivera Sun, your host, and I'm speaking to you from Taos, New Mexico. We are flying solo today on the show. Sherry is not able to be with us to interview Diane Patterson, which she's sad about, we're sad about, but we're going to have a fabulous show regardless. We'll have Sherry back on with us next week, never fear. I want to just let you guys know a little bit about Diane Patterson. You've been listening to her music every single week. She is the singer-songwriter of Love and Revolution, our theme song for this show. And we'll get into the story of that song a little later on. Diane is a singer. She's also known as a folk goddess, and you'll find out why in a little bit. I met Diane in my early 20s, right when I had moved from college to Santa Cruz, and I saw this amazing, truly a folk goddess performing, and thought, oh, if I could grow up to be just like Diane Patterson, that would be fabulous. She's on tour with her Teach, Inspire, Be Real CD, which does feature Love and Revolution on that CD. She is currently in Louisiana, and we're having this conversation with her there. So welcome, Diane.
Thank you, Rivera. It's great to be with you all today.
Well, it is just a treat and a pleasure to have you on the show. Diane, could you tell the listeners a little bit about how you got started on this journey of being a singer-songwriter? Were you always one? Was it something you discovered later on in life? And what has some of the arc of your experience been out there, really touring pretty much nonstop for the whole time I've known you, which is over 10 years now, I think?
When I was little, I had this fleeting fear that perhaps all the songs had been written. I must have been just a little girl, and I think I heard the Beatles. I thought, oh no. And fortunately, when I was in college, I finally started writing my own songs. So I was around 21, I think, when I wrote my first song. And some of my first songs were really political, I think, and were inspired by the people in Northern California saving the redwoods. I wrote a song called Horizontal Forest, which is a term from that movement. And I wrote a song about the homeless. And yeah, my music has been on an arc of a lot of activism and politics. And as I grow older, I'll be 50 at the end of this year, I find that my music is more and more spiritual minded, and there'll be some politics in there, and then it's real deep spirit more and more.
Well, that's kind of interesting, Diane, because, you know, having followed your music in the past 10 years and listening to your newest CD, for me, it's just getting more potent in terms of how we approach change. And I'm wondering, have you seen that too? I mean, is that part of your journey in as a creative being, is seeing the evolution of how change occurs?
Ha ha, great question. Indeed, I mean, a political song is important, and I feel like it's really on the heart level that I reach people, and perhaps that's really where change happens. And, you know, since music goes to the heart, and I've noticed that's where so much political change happens, is in the music, in people uniting together in song. If it's South Africa or whatnot, it's so unifying to have song together.
Now, one of the things that intrigued me about your music from the very first day that I saw you perform up until currently is that it has what I might consider a strong feminist thread through it. I don't know if thread's even the right word. It's really a tapestry. What drove you to start writing and singing about that and to weaving it into everything that you're doing?
Wow. I went to UC Davis in Northern California, and I started my activism there, and women were activating. We were all activating together for about a lot of things. One was women's rights, and it's funny, but the first song I ever wrote is a beautiful song called Black Eyed Susan, and it's on my album Hip the Hip. And it was inspired by a woman named Susan, who was a dear friend, who told me her story. And it was so heart-wrenching that I promptly went home and wrote my first song. And it's a beautiful song. So there you have it. There's the roots of a woman's story.
What would you say about the work that still remains in terms of women's rights, equality, gender issues, sexuality? And, you know, for me, you mentioned your early origins as a singer-songwriter being in regards to the Redwoods. Now, we're at a point of a climate crisis, and we're dealing with the destruction of the earth, the destruction of Mother Earth. Where would you say the movement has turned in the years that you've been singing about it? And what is it that you feel most importantly needs to be focused on or built in awareness today?
Wow, that's a big question. What's coming to mind is a song that I'm in the process of recording right now. It's called Come On Rain. It's a song about forgiveness. It's definitely a calling rain song. And what I've put in there is the sacred relationship between the Father Sky and the Mother Earth, and the rain falling, and this loving between the Mother Earth and the Father Sky, and this divine connection. And that came from reading an article in the Santa Cruz Weekly. Some women were talking about, now we've called the earth our mother for so long, and what about shifting that to mother, to earth as lover? And maybe people who didn't quite understand or take to heart earth as mother, maybe those people might understand and connect with more earth as lover. And so I loved that little shift in perspective to try and reach on a deep level, or maybe even a very simple level, more of humanity to connect and just hold as special and sacred, and something that's actually alive, this earth that we live on, and we live with, and we live in all her systems. And I think it's easy in our industrial world to go along in our lives and just not even give a thought, especially we're in cities, you know, we're driving around on asphalt and living by a time clock rather than nature cycles. And so what about that lover mother? That's what I got. And so that's in this new song. And I'm excited to say that I just was in the recording studio in the home of Ani DeFranco and her husband, producer, and they were helping me record that song. And we had a good time. That's a slide guitar song. And Ani put an acoustic, the National guitar, that steel guitar sound. She did a track of that on it. And so that'll be released before too long. And you can hear about the Earth Lover.
That is so great. You know, a couple things come to mind from that. One is a wonderful book by Joanna Macy called World is Lover, World is Self, that really explores some of these themes that you're talking about. And I think you're both really right on it, and this idea that, you know, if we don't have an honoring and respectful relationship with our mother, the metaphor just falls apart. But if we think of the most sacred, most special relationship we have, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's our brother, maybe it's a teacher that we had, maybe it's a lover, maybe it's our mother. But if we take whatever that metaphor is for the sacred relationship, and we apply that to our beloved earth, our only home, the place that gives us all of us our sustenance and nurturance, there's not one ounce of our being that comes from anywhere outside of the earth's biosphere. And we start to apply that metaphor of relationship to the earth, I think we're going to discover something very profound for each and every one of us in that. Now, I'm so glad to hear that you're recording the Come On Rain song, because I got to hear you sing that in Madrid, New Mexico, right down the road from here at the Love as Revolution Festival. And it is just one of the most sensual and beautiful and evocative songs I have heard in a long time. I got shivers and chills listening to it live. So I am very excited to hear that it's coming out in recorded format so that other people can hear it. Speaking of recordings, I want to turn the conversation a little bit into the theme song that we picked up from you for this show, Love and Revolution, because it is now in its first recorded format on your new CD, Teach, Inspire, Be Real. Diane, you want to share with the listeners the story of how that song came into being?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, Love and Revolution is part of the title of Rivera San, your fabulous novel, The Dandelion Insurrection, Love and Revolution. And I had the pleasure and inspiration to read that book a couple of years ago and definitely took it to heart. I was amazed that you could paint such a powerful picture of what it would look like to have a revolution with love in our country. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that through you and having the courage and the stamina to bring it out to us. And my song has, you know, songs have lots of inspiration. So there I was with Love and Revolution. And then Joanna Macy, again, also said, when I got to hear her speak some years ago, she said, you know, perhaps it's good that we don't know if we're going to make it in these tumultuous times of global warming and trigger weapons. And because she said, if we knew that we were going to make it, maybe we would just get lazy and we wouldn't come to our full potential and do our work to figure out this world and find our way to contribute. And then she went on to say, you know, if we knew that we weren't going to make it in this world, maybe we would just crumble in despair and we just again, we wouldn't find our way to know what is our best way to show up in this human form this time. And so powerful, just the unknowing, that jaguar medicine of the unknown that keeps us moving forward and keeps us discovering. And Joanna Macy and even Michael Mead, our elder teacher from New York, who I get to hear speak at Beloved Festival near Portland, Oregon, and who has so many wonderful books from his work as a mythologist, and he works with young people who need support. And he said his newest book that I know of is called Why the World Doesn't End. He said he knew he had to write this book because the youth in these times come into, again, a tumultuous world, and they say, is the world going to end? They say, is there going to be a world for us when we grow up? And Michael Mead assures us that mythologically speaking, the world can't end because it's always in a cycle of rebirthing itself again. So thank you to all of that good news. And it's all woven into the song Love and Revolution that's on my new CD, Teach, Inspire, Be Real.
It is so great to hear you tell that story and to share with our listeners the mutual inspiration that has gone around and around and around, you know, yet another cycle, like the world beginning and ending again, is the cycle of artists and the way we support one another. And this is such a great story of that. You know, it's really a meditation for me because I work with the song every single week as I'm editing this show, to listen to those same words over and over again. And we close the show with the part of the song that says, what if you knew that your actions determine the outcomes of everything? And we use that in a very particular way in Love and Revolution Radio, which is to kind of highlight or there's probably a musical term for this, but crescendo after asking our listeners a question about how they're going to change their lives this week before we talk to them next week. So it's been a really profound meditation and inspiration on this show. And I know I've heard from many listeners how much they appreciate the song and how much they've been looking forward. And they do write to me quite a bit asking where they can get a hold of a copy of it. So I'm glad that you have it out on your CD, Teach, Inspire, Be Real. And they can get a hold of that through your website, dianepatterson.org, and by sending you an email for the new release, since we're in the interim period between the first print and the second print. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. Feel free to drop me an email at dianepatterson@me.com. And I'll be glad to talk with you about how we can get you a copy. And soon it'll be on CD Baby and iTunes and all of that. From my website, you'll be able to just click over. And I'm dianepatterson.org.
Great. And, you know, what about this title of your new CD, Teach, Inspire, Be Real? It sounds self-explanatory, but I bet there's a bit of a story behind your intention with that title, and also perhaps some of the intentions with this current tour that you're on. You want to share a little bit about that?
Thank you. I do. Teach, Inspire, Be Real came in a beautiful ceremonial way that's almost inexplicable. And it's like a lot of the songs, it's almost like they stream through, and then through the years, they reveal their meanings more and more. And as I take off on this tour early in April, I was asking myself, what does Teach, Inspire, Be Real mean? And I noticed right away, and it's been proving itself to me again and again, that without even trying, we're doing those things. We're always teaching, whether we know it or not, because our people, our family, our loved ones, our friends, they're watching us all the time. What are we saying? What are we doing? They love us. We all emulate each other, you know, and so I realized we're teaching all the time, whether we know it or not. And it's a reminder to show up the best we can and take responsibility for those actions and thoughts and words. And and just know that we can inspire each other. And sometimes it only takes a little bit more of thought and care to take the conversation to the next level of how are you really, and what's up for you, and what are you thinking about, and what's important to you. And that's where the be real is. I realize be real comes in part from Spoon Jackson, who is serving a life without parole sentence in the California prisons. And I've corresponded with him for almost 10 years. He is an inspiration to me because all those years in such an institution, from the time he was 19 and now he's in his late 50s, he's still sane. He's a mentor. He's a poet. He's known internationally for his writing. I've written a song inspired by him that's also on my new CD. It's called At Night You Fly. And Spoon would sign every letter to me. Go, Diane. You can do it. Go, Folk Goddess. Keep going out there and sharing your songs and your music. Be real. Don't forget the realness. And I'm so grateful for that. All those words of encouragement, they work on me. I really thrive in that.
That's one thing I love hearing about your stories, Diane, is that you've been steeped in this process of both engaging with our world, engaging with the spirit, and turning it into music and art, passing it through you to others and receiving from others for so much of your life. And I feel like that comes out not just in your music, but in the quality of your being in the world. And that story you shared about your friend in prison is just a really good example of that. And I love what you said earlier about we have a responsibility to know that every time we show up in this world, and we don't really have a choice, we're here, we're existent, we are always affecting people. We're always possibly inspiring them for better or for worse, actually. And that people are picking up on what we do and emulating it, mimicking it again for better or for worse. So we might as well try to put our best foot forward in really showing up in a positive way. And I know that was true for me with seeing you for the first time. I was the young girl out of college sitting in the lighting booth doing the lighting for a concert that you were playing at. And it had such a profound effect on my 20s and all the way up through to today. And, you know, I don't think we ever exchanged a word in that first meeting. And so we never know how we're affecting others. And so in that arena of not knowing, as you said, we have a responsibility to show up to the best of our ability. I wanted to ask you a question about making music in these times. You know, your whole life has been in a time of great change. There's been nothing slow or certain about these times that we're living in. And what is your thoughts on the role of musicians and artists and other modalities in both offering hope and encouraging people to look at the challenges that we face?
Wow. Challenges that we face. There's so much weaving of community and friendship that can be done. My album before this one is called Build a Bridge. And I feel like, and I know that that's what I'm doing as I go on these tours in Europe or West Coast or Hawaii or Mexico. And now for the first time across our beautiful land, I haven't seen all these states before. I'm in Louisiana where my mother is from. And it's kind of like a pilgrimage. It really is. And I'm building bridges. So I'm showing up in a way that is friendship and beauty and connection. And I make a point to be present with the people I meet and thank them for doing my sound or feeding me or being family or being friend. And I just think it's the human connections like that that we have opportunities for every day that give people some kind of reason to live. You know, I think a lot of people are isolated the way we live culturally, and they don't always have a heart connection. They might not be blessed to have a strong companion or even family that they live with. And I try to remember that and just make heart connections and, yeah, build bridges of some kind. We traveled through Alabama and did a house concert and went horseback riding at our friend's home who we're very different politically, and she told us we'd be safe there because she has firearms. It's not, you know, it's not my way, and it doesn't matter because we're friends, and we had a beautiful heart connection time together. And she heard my music, and it went straight to her heart. And I think that is something that we always have the power to make the best of, regardless of what the bigger, perhaps bigger, maybe they aren't bigger, these political things in the world. Maybe it's the heart connection that's way bigger, and that's just the joke on all of us.
That is a really intriguing reframing of it. And, you know, I tend to agree with you that if we get right down into it, if you look at nonviolent movements for change, which, as you know, is one of my passions and my interests, the most successful movements in the long term are the ones that actually look at the hearts of the people, that really carefully examine, you know, what beliefs are our hearts holding? What are our values, and where do our practices in the world not actually line up or match our values? If we believe in love, but we're practicing, say, segregation in the Deep South pre-civil rights movement, or even contemporarily today, if we believe in love, but we're practicing discrimination, hatred, fear, that's an example of our values not lining up with our practices. Nobody likes to say we believe in hatred. Hatred is a way of life. We don't necessarily, we usually don't as humans believe in that. But our practices may be at odds with what we preach, what we believe in. And so nonviolent movements for change seek to raise up those dichotomies and really engage our cultures in examining them and transforming them. And I think that's one reason why music and art play such a pivotal role in movements for change, is that they are vehicles for holding up beliefs for and letting us examine them, maybe positing a different belief and letting us join into it and practice it. I mean, music with its refrains is almost like a mantra. It's something we repeat to ourselves. I don't know about our listeners here, but I know I leave the show every week humming Love and Revolution to myself. Mm-hmm. And that has an effect on my life, even though I work for movements of change constantly since starting this show. The two concepts of love and revolution are always in my mind every single week. It's a mantra. And do you find that this happens to you as you're writing songs, recording songs, being on the road, that different songs become your mantra of change?
Oh, yeah. I love the soundtrack of my life with the songs coming through. And I'm really picky, as you can imagine, because I do sing those songs over and over for years and years. And they are mantras in effect. So, I mean, I can remember when I was having fun with one of the Grateful Dead songs called Friend of the Devil, for example. And it's such a fun song, and it has such a great beat and everything. But after I played it a few times and performed it a few times, I said, you know, I don't actually align with this song. I don't want to be in trouble with the law. And I don't, you know, that's not really what I'm going for. So I stopped singing that song. And yeah, I'm pretty picky.
We'll be back after a quick break for a station ID and some of Diane Patterson's wonderful music.
So let them plant their seeds in you, that you may be a wise one too. And if an elder takes a moment to share a tale or two, just listen closely for experience, the gift they bring to you.
Our featured guest this week and our featured musician is the one and only Diane Patterson. This song is from her new CD, Teach, Inspire, Be Real, which you can find at www.dianepatterson.org. And now let's return to our program. What is, let's talk a little bit more about some of the new songs that are in your mantra. So we spoke a little bit about your song At Night You Fly, and we've spoken about There's a Medicine, which is where Teach, Inspire, Be Real shows up in the refrain, and Love and Revolution. We've actually, you know, getting to dig into this new album, which is really fun. I mean, I bet you don't get to do that on a radio show every week. You should. I want to ask you, one of my favorite songs on here is Made in the Flower. And the refrain is, Made in the Flower, Mother the Fruit, Grandmother is the Seed. Let me ask you, where does this song come from? And it's very deeply honoring of all phases of life, but especially the role of elders in our world, which is in the U.S., we have such a problem around that. We discard our elders versus honoring them and bring them closer to our hearts. Where did this song come from, and what does it mean for everyone?
You're so good. Thank you for asking me about that. I love Made in the Flower. The elder honoring part came from Elizabeth Lindsay, an amazing Hawaiian scholar that I heard speak at Bioneers Conference. She's studying celestial navigation and many of the Asian Pacific Island traditional arts and that are being being kept alive through her work. And she said to a big audience, she said, every elder is a library of knowledge and history, and when one dies, all of this is lost. And that was years ago, and finally the song unfolded that I could sing those lines in, and it's Made in the Flower. The verse about the children is me making a very intentional prayer for the safety of the children. I'm honoring their world of imagination and asking that they continue to be allowed to have that safe space to be children and play, and that the adults never take advantage of these open eyes on them, I say in the song. And the maiden mother and crone part is a fun story where that came from. I was in Sweden and there were five of us up on a beautiful grassy hill overlooking the sea and on one side and a forest on the other side. And we were there to make a little simple little prayer of goodness together. And we were all in a circle around some stones, and I was contemplating the beautiful young Swedish lady across the circle from me, and she was probably about 25, and indeed she was a mother, but I was thinking of her as maiden because she's very young and beautiful, and in that moment I thought to myself, I'm not that anymore. I'm in a mother stage of my life. And she's like the flower, and I'm like the fruit. And I said, if a woman is willing to let the flower fall and not be so worried about being the cutest, the sexiest, the blah, 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 then then and then may her fruit come full and her gifts to the world mature and have their power. And that was so healthy for me. And so I'm sharing my process in that song of letting go and becoming. And I sat with that throughout that day in Sweden, maiden the flower, mother the fruit. And later in the day, I said to myself, grandmother is the seed. There she is, like a seed holding all that knowledge and information in there. What a miracle the seed is, that it can sprout and know exactly what to do to become an oak tree or a sunflower. And part of why I'm singing about seeds in these times is that I'm frustrated with genetic modification of our food and our plants, who are our family in this earth. And the plants are so sacred to us. They heal us, they feed us, on and on. And rather, for me, rather than talk negatively about the companies that are doing that, I feel that my job is to celebrate the plants and the seeds and to teach and inspire and be real in that way, to instill in my human family a respect for the plants and the seeds in hopes that in that way we'll learn to honor them and not defile them by taking them into the lab and changing them.
That is so beautiful, Diane. And, you know, I remember as a young person, maybe 15 years old, my family's farm got involved in the very early work against genetic modification. And so I have clear memories of putting no Frankenfood stickers on our boxes of potatoes long before it had hit mass cultural awareness. And watching that movement over the years has been deeply moving for me to see one of my earliest forms of what I might term political activity grow into a global movement of resistance to this. It's really a violation of a sacred thing. The seeds are so sacred. I was just reading a story of Russians in the communist era who starved to death in a seed library that they had barricaded during a time of famine to protect and preserve the seeds from being just eaten by everyone who were very hungry. And that sacrifice in preserving this culture, and we see this sacrifice in Latin America and South America, where indigenous and non-indigenous cultures are standing up against mega corporations to demand that we keep the sanctity alive, that it's beyond even economics or maybe cultural values. It's in something incredibly sacred that is a trust between humans and the biosphere. We saw this again in the cases of the Indian farmers who committed suicide in despair when they planted genetically modified seeds and they couldn't replant them the next year. We think of that as an economic situation because they couldn't afford to buy more seed, but there's something much more deep about that. It's something very, I think, entwined in our genetics as human beings. And so, you know, when I heard that song about the maiden, the mother, and the grandmother, the concept of the grandmother as a seed and the library of such knowledge was so profound, because usually we think of the child as a seed, but to reframe that as the repository of all the work and effort of a lifetime distilling into a seed, and the seed holds the code for all the life and fertility and beauty of what is to come. And that is our elders. That is incredible. And there is such a parallel that I had never realized between how we discard our elders in this culture and how we discard the knowledge and the wisdom of our seeds in this culture. Very profound. I wanted to ask you another personal question, though, because since we're on this song, and it is a personal song for you. Now, I presume, I don't know for sure, but I don't think you have any children. Is that right?
I did help raise a girl who called me yesterday on Mother's Day and told me that she and her partner are pregnant, so I'll soon be a grandmother.
Wow, that is so great. Well, that is a great example. Okay, so this is what I was going to ask you. As one artist who doesn't have children and doesn't care to have biological children, to another artist who does not have her own biological children, I have always felt like the process of creating culture and life and the human beingness is so far beyond the simple passing on of genetics, that all of us are called to the table of birthing our culture again and again, just as we're saying, where the world is never just ending, but beginning anew. What is your take on mothering a culture, bringing into the world a new culture, raising a whole village of children, or being the village that raises a child, and that part of your journey? Would you care to share some of that?
Oh my goodness. Beautiful questions. Wow. Yeah. I was so excited to get that call yesterday. I think there's something about the grandmother that has the perspective beyond what the mother can have. We see see a much larger timeline. I also didn't care to have children. When I was in high school, I read The Population Bomb, and I got concerned about too many people on the earth, and I feel that, and as time passes, I think I've softened to see that part of being alive is making the next generation. And of course, I don't have to genetically reproduce, as you say, but I do want to have a positive, loving gift of myself to next generations. Fortunately, I no longer have to judge procreating. In my youth, I thought it was just, oh, there's so many people. And now I see more of people showing up with love and creating spaces for their children and their grandchildren to learn and grow and be good people. And that feels bigger than the question of should I or should I not procreate. There's so much to give. My partner, my beloved Sheba Love, is having her daughter's having the third grandchild soon. So we are big grandmothers now with four all together with what's on the way. And I want to celebrate the way my partner shows up, in that she, from when her first grandchild was born, was there every Thursday all day long to have grandma, Meemaw day. And I know that's made those kids happier and stronger, and knowing where they come from and having more experiences to learn and grow and know this world's fine aspects and the jewel that life is. And I'd say my answer is to have more creative time with the kids, more time to play, and more time to just be with them in the most varied, fun ways that we can. Take them places and spend that time. Yeah, because the next generation hopefully will be smarter than us. And let's break out of the paradigm where we're in competition. I mean, I was raised in a way that I think, honestly, there was a little competition. And I think we can grow out of that and just hold our children and our grandchildren up to the light and say, please take it beyond where we've gone. Please be smarter and full of more love and intelligence and understanding that can bring humanity to a healthier place, where the children never have bombs falling and just always know that Yeah, that they can wake up and hear birds singing.
Wow, that's really beautiful to hear you say that. And I think about that, many of those themes as well. I'm not nearly close to being a grandmother yet, but my mother's just entering that phase. And my twin sister has three children, which is actually, if you're an identical twin, it's a very vicarious, interesting experience because your genetics have actually reproduced with your sister's partner in life. It's terribly humorous and entertaining. At the same time, it's awe-inspiring and fascinating. One of the things that I want to ask you about, given your time touring the country and playing music, is you are a folk goddess, no two ways about it for me. And you have gone from one place to another, these little pinpoints of light in the sea of our massive culture that generally is something else altogether. And you've gone from one place to another over the years again and again and again. Have you seen this alternative way of being, this alternative way of life expanding and growing? Do you think that it's that there are more people shifting in this direction of, say, a connection to the earth, connection to each other, different ways of relating than we might have been taught in our upbringings? What's your take on that?
Hawaii comes to mind. I've been playing music in definitely Maui, sometimes the Big Island of Hawaii, sometimes Kauai, for about 10 winters. And the first year that I went there, it was the year that Lieutenant Aaron Watada stood up and said, "No, I won't take my troop back to," I think it was Afghanistan at that time, refused as an officer. And he was court-martialed. And on the eve of his court-martial hearing, we had an event in Maui. And we made such a strong prayer. We really came together as a community. We had a little show there in the space. And I mean, people from a lot of different walks of life there in Maui came into that show that otherwise wouldn't have just showed up for a little Diane Patterson concert. We were doing something for the world together. And the next day, actually, in the hearing, the whole thing was pretty much thrown out of court. It was pretty much over. And Lieutenant Aaron Watada was not sent to military prison. Thank you, gods and goddesses. We felt like our prayers were answered and the power of prayer again was validated. And now 10 years later, what's happening on the island of Maui is that one of the big sugar cane growing companies, which as we know is so detrimental to the environment there in the islands, one of those companies was caught stealing power, I believe, or it may have been water, power or water, and they've now been disallowed to grow sugarcane on the island. Now, this is a big thing. It's a lot of jobs, a lot of resources. Environmentally, it's a huge shift, and many of the citizens of Maui are very, very happy about this shift. And what I see is the development over time is that the communities come together with ideas, very strong, well thought out ideas of how to use that land, which now, if it were to just be left fallow, this topsoil would dry up and blow off, and all the chemicals that were used to grow that would be going around in the air. So they're devising a plan to remediate the soil by doing cover cropping of certain kinds that they've researched, and then over a span of a few years, creating community gardens. They want to grow more food on the Hawaiian Islands, make it more sustainable, because they know that most of what they consume is shipped in, which is not sustainable and expensive in so many ways. So, yeah, I see progress. I see I see we're moving forward as a community, and I feel I love feeling a part of that community. And like over the years, my music and my prayers have been met, matched, held up, and uplifted by that community. And I take my people with me wherever I go. I feel like I show up to a concert with a fleet of hundreds, if not thousands, behind me and singing with me, because we love these songs and they mean more to us than we can even say.
That's so beautiful. And I got this image of not just the physical people in present, but the spirits of all that you've touched throughout the time, whether they're living or they passed on in changed forms, but that you become as Walt Whitman said, you were large, you contain multitudes, you contain the energy of all the people who have sung with you and take it to the next community and weave our hearts together. Here's a funny question for you, though. Let's imagine that out there listening to this radio show, there's a young artist. Maybe they're not young in body, but they're just starting their journey. Maybe they're a musician. Maybe they're some kind of other artist. And they're looking to take their first step or their next step. What would you say to this young singer or young artist?
Wow. You know, in spending a little time with Ani DeFranco a few days ago, and Ani is someone I respect so much. She's such a successful, independent folk activist songwriter. She's celebrated our folk elders, our activist elders, in such powerful, beautiful ways. I was talking with her about the youth. I said, I had a question for her. I said, is there anything that you say to the girls or to the kids when you're talking to the kids to encourage them, to let them know that they can do this. They can do this thing with music. She said, you know, I think they know that they can do it. I said, I'm so glad you said that, because I know when I grew up, I really didn't have someone saying to me, you know, you have some talent. It's worth pursuing. You know, it took me a long time to figure it out. And that's fine. And I love what it is for me. And I love my path of discovery of who I am and what I have to offer. And that 20 years later, after being called the folk goddess by Whole Earth Festival in Davis, that 20 years later, I'm saying to myself, you know what? Actually, I am the folk goddess. And so I just love that there's more and more role models for the youth. And at the same time, I'm going to say, I think it's really powerful to recognize the kids and let them know when they have talent in certain areas and support that and take them to people who can be their mentors, take them to musicians or take them to artists or take them to physicists or whatever it is that they love or that they have talent for, and develop that and focus less on this crazy core skill thing and these funny square pegs that they try to push us into. And some kids thrive in that, and that's great. And others don't. And to take the time and give the kids their own unique space to be in, to grow into.
Thank you for that. Just to evoke something Sherry always says, is that you are a goddess. Each and every one of us, you're a god and goddess. And not to let it go to your head, really, but let it go to your heart. And let it go to your presence in the world. And don't back down from that. Believe in yourself and believe in others. Many people haven't gotten the right soil or fertilizing for growing the blossom that they are. And so it's our job to supply that, because those of us who know that love is an undrainable well that's constantly flowing, our job is to shower other people with it. So I love what you said, and I love this idea that we can remember for each other, not just for the kids who are young in their bodies, but also those of us who are young in other ways or just starting a process to help connect one another to the skills and knowledge that we need. I know that I've learned so many skills along the way, even this radio show. Having done Occupy Radio for 2 years with David Getchy, Sierra Lupe, he really took me by the hand and said, look, Rivera, you could run this show on yourself, you could edit the shows, and you could get them out there, and I can help you do it. Here's how you're going to do it. And he sat down with me and he taught me how to edit a radio show. So without those kind of mentors, we don't get connected and learn how to blossom in our unique ways. So I love that you bring that up. And let me just remind the listeners in our last few minutes of the show that we are talking with the amazing folk goddess Diane Patterson, singer-songwriter. She has many CDs out, which you can find at dianepatterson.org, including her newest CD, Teach, Inspire, Be Real, on which you can find the first recording of Love and Revolution, our theme song for this radio show. Diane, it has been a very sacred and special time having this conversation with you, something very dear to my heart from our long journey together. And what would you like to offer for any last words or thoughts to share with our listeners today?
You know, what's coming to mind is I'm getting to study with Martin Prechtel right now in these years. And he is an indigenous author and teacher and has powerful, powerful perspectives, unlike any other, always reminding me that I am not crazy. I'm on it with my love for this world, my love for the natural world. And there's something he says that's coming to mind, and that's that we should walk around like stuck up kings and queens because we are made so beautifully. This creation has made us that royalty, and to like you said, not to let it go to our heads, but to show up so fine because we are made so fine.
That is so beautiful. Well, I certainly feel that about you, Diane Patterson, and I know many of our listeners do. And just thank you for shining your full self here on Love and Revolution Radio, not just this week in this interview, but every week in your beautiful song that we're so grateful to get to air.
Thank you for doing that. Such a delight.
I need you to be love, 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 love and revolution.
Thanks this week to our guest, Diane Patterson. The theme song, Love and Revolution, is by Diane Patterson and performed with her in Spirit Radio. You can find more of her great music, including her new Teach, Inspire, Be Real CD, at www.dianepatterson.org. You can reach us with any questions, comments, or feedback you might have on the Love and Revolution page on my website, www.riverasun.com. This week, Diane Patterson has given us lots to think about, especially our role and responsibility in bringing our creativity into play. Perhaps, listeners, you'll find one more way to engage your artistic skills in making a just, sustainable, and compassionate world by the time we talk to you next week.